Everybody. We are back. So, Thea Wolf, I want to give everybody out there, the picture. She was just knitting. What are you knitting,
Thea? I'm just knitting a scarf right now. I really wanted something mindless.
Okay, keep yourself busy. Now, it has something to do, you're explaining it to it, and I hate to rehash kind of what was said during the break, but what were you saying about how does it come in? How does it play into your preparation for the fight?
I just am keeping my hands moving and keeping myself busy, I guess. Through fight camp, you're just going and going and going with work and training, and you get into this like kind of overdrive mode. And so now I'm in rest week where I'm not really doing much.
Rest week,
right? We take a week before we fight to let our body heal. So when we go into the cage, we're really fresh.
So tell me about your fight real quick. We'll get right back into this.
It's this coming Saturday.
What time are you fighting? Do you know?
That's a good question. I think at this point, and this could change again because it's changed a bunch, but I think I'm the fifth fight on the card. And Phoenix is, AKA Flat Top, I believe the third fight on the card. So we're both fighting on the earlier end, which is, I think, really nice because then I can shower up and watch the fights and enjoy and celebrate.
That's great.
But yeah, knitting is something that, I really like to do because it's mindless and it keeps my hands moving.
Yeah.
And I feel like I can expel, a lot of energy through my hands.
Oh, to calm yourself down.
Yeah, I don't feel like I need to be calmed down. I just feel like I have a lot of excess energy right now.
Got it.
I feel pretty calm, but very electrified as well.
Heightened, as you put it.
Yes, very heightened.
I had an electrifying band practice the other night.
Nice.
And the band situation had been really, just in turmoil for me. I had some certain members like fucking around. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It was just weird for a couple weeks there. And I was just kind of like sweating it.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally had this great practice and I couldn't go to sleep that night.
Uh-huh.
And I was trying to think, I was like, what the fuck's happening? Like, did I have caffeine? Mm-hmm. There was, oh no, it was great. And so I, on a smaller level, I know what you mean.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. And I don't really sleep much during fight camp because, our MMA practices down at Ivan Salivary and around, we don't get out of the gym until 10:30, 11 a lot of the time
at night. Yeah.
And, I'm up early to work and it's hard after you spend, your evening, sparring to go home and just crash. It's not, you'd think you'd be exhausted, but that's quite the opposite for me.
Right. And who are you fighting on Saturday?
I am fighting Amy Little Dynamite Davis.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's her stats?
She is, first of all, I want to say I'm so appreciative of her stepping in and taking this fight with me because initially I was set to face Lightning Liz McCarthy out of Team Quest. And unfortunately, Liz got hurt and had to withdraw from the fight.
How did Liz get hurt?
I have no idea, and I'm sure that that's not something that she necessarily wants anyone to know.
Oh, sure.
And so I didn't ask, although I hit her up on Facebook and let her know, I was thinking about her, and I hope that she healed quickly and that we could fight in the future because it's really, really shitty to be an athlete that has put a lot into a fight camp, into training. Anytime you get injured as an athlete, it's just a multi-level blow. But
now you're telling me now how you messaged her on Facebook in very respectful terms. Did it really play out like, what's up? I know you're ducking this. We better hit this up in the future.
Oh, fuck no. No, I've pulled out of fights because I've been injured. I'm sure this, she wanted to fight me. Liz is a very good fighter. And
yeah. Lightning Liz.
Yeah. She's a very good fighter. And I have no doubt in my mind that this was a case of her getting injured. 105ers.
I was just making a joke.
No, but that does happen sometimes. But you know, we're the smallest people at our gym, always, the atom weights. We're the smallest weight class. And, you know, in my experience, I've usually been, you know, either one of two or the only female at every gym I've been at. So, so we get hurt more a lot of the time in training because the people that we're training with are just bigger, and there's only so much you can do to pull your power or control your weight, you know? But yeah, no, I hit her up and told her that I was, you know, really sorry she'd gotten hurt. And my manager said, well, we do have this other woman who's willing to take the fight. And her name's Amy Davis. Look her up. And I was like, I know who Amy Davis is. I don't need to look her up.
You knew who she was?
Oh, fuck yeah.
Like from the fighting scene?
Like I've been watching Amy Davis fight since before I ever fought.
Oh.
She's a real veteran.
How does that feel? I mean, is it, you know, there's a certain amount of respect that goes in there. Does it change things a little bit since you kind of like were seeing her before you were in the realm?
You know, honestly, yes and no. It means a lot to me to be able to test myself against such a seasoned vet. And to have the opportunity to face somebody that has had such a respectable career in the sport. You know, she's currently ranked number 9 in the world.
Number 9 in the world?
Yes. So this is a really, really big deal fight for me. And she has a shitload of Muay Thai fights and a lot more MMA fights than me. And I just, you know, I respect anybody who's had a career like that.
Of course.
So to be able to get in there with her is a huge honor. And
does it change your perspective as far as, let me be blunt, the fear factor?
No, I have no fear about this.
Straight up.
No.
Guys, she looked at me very intensely with no hesitation, no fear.
I believe. Yeah, fear. I don't fight with fear.
And that's right. I think if people have a lot of fear, they aren't fighting, right?
You know, if you're going to fight, you might as well leave your fear outside the cage. You know, cool. I mean,
what's going to happen is going to happen.
Exactly. And the thing is I get punched and kicked and choked and you know, taken down at my gym all the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the worst thing in the world. Some people are like, oh, you know, what if your nose is broken? Man, I've broken my nose so many times. It's not a big deal. You know? Yeah.
You got a mouth guard.
Yeah. And the thing is this is the fun part. There's no need to fear this. I get way more nervous in MMA practice at the gym than I do fighting.
Why is that?
Because that's where I'm being the most self-critical. That's where my team is being the most critical of me. That is the place where I'm trying to master technique and execute things properly. In a fight, I'm just trying to win. I'm trying to, when I, the fight is, go in there and try and beat someone's ass. So it's very freeing. You don't have to worry about technique. You trust that you've done the training and that your body is going to do the right thing.
Yes.
And you know that you can take shots, you know. I have Paul Hage dropping me with, you know, body shots and knocking me down with punches and kicking me in the head. You know, that dude is very big compared to me.
He's yoked.
So like going into a cage and letting somebody smaller do that to me after I've prepared myself isn't really that stressful to me.
Right. You said last time, you're talking about taking shots. You said last fight you had, I believe you've only had one.
One other pro.
Your last fight was, you came in here directly after that, after you'd won.
Yeah.
Right? You said first, straight out the gate, your lip got busted open, right?
Yeah.
First thing. That must have been crazy. That's what you mean by taking shots, so.
Yeah.
I don't think that'll happen again, but.
It's, you know, I mean, it doesn't feel that crazy in the moment. It's very peaceful to be in the cage, but it definitely was a moment of, oh, I can't let her hit me like that again. Because, like I said before, Sarah Lagerstrom has fucking heavy hands, man. Yeah. And I know all her opponents have said that to her. And
What is it that makes a hand heavy? Because I remember high school friends of mine, fuck around. Oh, yeah, we can swear on the show. Oh, and they'd hit me in the arm or something, or whatever it was. And some guys, just like their hands were so heavy. Is it just big? What does it mean? Large bones in the hand?
No, I mean, I would say.
Or is it more how they punch?
For the most part, it's how you punch.
It is how.
Okay. It's the technique.
Knowing how to direct your.
Technique exists for a reason, you know? And especially I've seen, now that I'm working as a coach, I've seen, you know, once I can fine tune somebody's technique, the strikes just come so much harder. I have a woman I coach who's this.
Maybe give me a little technique today.
Yeah, I would totally.
Well, I don't know if we have time.
I have this woman that I coach who's like this very nice, sweet piano teacher who's been seeing me for a little while for privates. And I literally have her kicking harder than all the men in my class because she's gotten the technique down. And
interesting.
So a lot of it's technique. That being said, some people find their own sweet spot, their own technique within their own body mechanics.
And if you tried to teach them a proper technique, it might actually take away.
Well, you know, you need both. It's just like any other art. Mm-hmm. You can learn the, you know, objective technique, and then you can find what works for you. Mm-hmm. And every rule, you know, has a place where it's meant to be broken. And so I have to say that, like, the punch that Sarah Lagerstrom hit me with, that was, you know, the really, like, whoa, the money shot, was kind of an overhand right, I would say, but it didn't come, you know, even super technically. It's just, she just knows how to use her body to punch people extremely hard with that particular strike.
And you won that fight, by the way.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, after she hit me once, I was like, oh my God, never again.
Wow.
So
it's interesting that maybe, ironically, that could have encouraged you in a way to win the fight.
Oh, getting absolutely. That's how, you know, that's how it usually goes for me. If you, you touch me.
Interesting. Interesting. Something goes off in your brain.
Yeah. I just think, nope.
Yep.
You're not allowed to do that. So I don't really, worry about getting punched. I feel like it's to my advantage to get punched.
Interesting.
Especially if you hit me with something good.
I remember a fairly big boxing fan, not lately as much, but back in the day. Uh-huh. And I remember Evander Holyfield, who started out as a cruiserweight and ended up being heavyweight champion and all that and beating Mike Tyson. He said in his early career, he was always afraid of getting knocked out.
Hmm.
And it kind of hindered him, you know, that fear. But one time in practice or about, I don't know, he just got knocked out clean. And he said, it was the most, non-issue, almost peaceful. It just happened. And he realized, wow, that's all there is to it?
Hmm.
Like, getting knocked out? And from that point on, he was fearless and didn't even think about it, which is interesting, like, facing your worst fear. And I don't know. Have you ever been knocked out in a fight, Thea?
No.
Yeah. Practice?
No.
No,
I've never been knocked out. Even my car didn't knock me out when it flipped over my head.
Oh, God.
So I don't. Yeah, I.
Yeah, Thea was in a horrible car accident and would have killed most people.
Yeah, I don't. I have not been knocked out at this point.
Anybody listening, you can go back to our other podcast and check that out. It's awesome. Anyway, you've never been knocked out.
No, I have been rocked, but I've never been knocked out.
Nice. Rocked like a concussion?
Well, I'm sure that I've been concussed. I mean, that guy, I definitely had a concussion after my car accident.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say I've been concussed from MMA. No, definitely not. I've eaten a couple of really good hard shots. And I actually, the one that really stands out to me was a guy I was sparring with about a week before my fight with Sarah Lagerstrom. And, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. This guy, not particularly good, but probably walks around about 150. So he's close to my size. That's still a lot bigger than me. But
you're under 110, I'm guessing.
I right now am about 113.
Okay.
So I'm at the end of my, it's time to cut weight, you know.
You have to cut weight still?
Oh, yeah, because I have to weigh in at 105. So.
Interesting.
So I'll tell you how all that works.
Yeah, later. We'll get into that.
but he threw this spinning back fist, which is a stupid punch. I mean, people love
that's
that.
That's spinning around, right?
Right. Your whole body. It's like a twirling punch. And like, you know, I shouldn't
say it's risky because you put your back.
It's a very risky punch and people love this fucking punch. People love twirling shit and anything that looks fancy. I remember in my fight with Sarah, so many people online were like, oh, can we see the spinning back fist that landed? So it landed on both my hands. I X-blocked this punch, but people love seeing these fucking spinning back fists so much.
Right.
But anyway, he actually, this guy at my gym actually hit me with it. And I got the like, woo, like my sort of like motion sickness visual for a second where my vision like rocked. And
okay, got it.
And I was like, and then I got mad. I got emotional. I get emotional in practice sometimes. I'm, you know,
yeah.
In a fight, I'm very calm. In practice, I get emotional because, like I said, I'm very critical of myself mm-hmm. and very hard on myself when mm-hmm. I'm training. And that was the closest I've ever been to, like, really being rocked. Like, the only time that my vision has done that. Although, like I said, that Sarah Lagerstrom punch was a very memorable punch. I definitely had the white flash there and an overwhelming, immediate sense that I needed to
step it up,
control her. Yeah.
Not step it up because you not like you were down.
You know what? But I did need to step it yeah. up because that's something that has been true of me is that I'm just not like I'm not an angry person. I'm not somebody that usually throws the first punch.
Yeah.
You know, I'm it's just in my nature to be calm and stoic until you push me.
yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I feel you. You as a child, you have any history of, you know, getting into scraps on the playground, on the sand lot, people fuck with you. Where does this come from? I know you, relatively speaking, you started a career in MMA or whatever you want to call it pretty late in life.
Very late.
Yes. You were 30.
Well, that's when I had my professional debut. I started training at 27. So right. and I blew my ACL out very early on. So I had some definite hurdles.
What's the ACL?
Pardon?
What is the ACL?
It is the basically it's the ligament that holds my femur and my tibia together. So it holds your fucking leg together. It's basically like one of the worst injuries, but also a fairly common injury.
It's common, yeah.
For people, and it's a 1-year recovery. So. It, you know, I felt it go. I was doing an MMA round. I felt the snap and total loss of tension between my upper and lower leg. So I knew there was like, and my bones were like sliding around on top of each other.
Strange sensation.
Oh, it's just the worst.
And painful?
Feeling. You know what? It didn't hurt.
You felt like gimpy.
Like I was saying, like my bones were literally sliding right. around. So if you like this, when I'd step over the bathtub, they'd just like move in ways that they had never moved before. You could, my leg was completely destabilized. When the actual impact happened, my knee bent in toward my other knee in a way that it should not have bent. So,
wow.
So, and I had to wait for 2 months to get the donor because I got a cadaver graft to string it back together. So that was, you know, a year out. So, I mean, I had, like I said, I'm late in life to the MMA thing for sure.
As a young person, did any of this manifest itself? Or did you fight people?
You know, it's very funny that you should ask that because, as a child, I was very...
I asked the funny questions.
It's a good and interesting question yeah. because I was very shy as a kid and I was, very weird and
imagine that Thea
you know weird became cool once I went to art school but up until that
it's like
point,
my middle name's Hiram I couldn't tell anybody about it until it got cool and I'm like oh it's fucking Hiram
yeah this is sweet, a pretty dude. I mean that's a pretty nice middle anyway, name I like
I know
it.
What you mean
yeah I mean as a kid I got bullied really really badly like I got bullied a lot And
how so? How did they bully you? Because I was relatively sheltered. I went to Catholic school. I got bullied by some rednecks a few times. But how did you get bullied?
Well,
specifically, what happens?
I went to a public school that was, I was really definitely the weird kid. And also, you know, I had a speech impediment. And
oh, you did?
I did.
What, like you couldn't pronounce your R's or you stuttered?
I had a really serious lisp.
A lisp?
Yeah.
You don't have it at all anymore.
Oh, thanks. I went to speech therapy, and actually I can still sort of occasionally hear my tendency to go back there. But yeah, I got it under control, and I had really super messed up teeth, which was part of my lisp.
Your teeth look very nice today,
Thank
Thea.
Thank you. Thank you. I have permanent braces on the back of them because they wouldn't stay straight.
I do too.
Really?
Well, wow. Bottoms.
Wow, twinsies.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Let me just digress for half a second. I find it interesting that you had a speech impediment, and now you seem to be doing all these cool things and really successful with them. You know, your art's really cool. Your association with Ween, the band. your MMA stuff. Evidently, you're a singer as well. I have this theory, and I've posed it mostly just inside my own head before, that people with speech impediments, if they can get through that, it's such a, if they can beat the speech impediment, it's such an inner struggle. And I think it must be like one of the hardest things to do, because you're literally kind of fighting, maybe, I don't know. My brother had a stutter. And he went to speech therapy for a long time, and he overcame it. And I just felt like it just increased his will, like his will to do things. Like just if you can overcome that, that's so personal inside your own head, like that speech, like you can kind of do anything. Do you feel that way at all? Do you think there's any correlation between like what you've accomplished these days and like overcoming that at an early age?
I'm a terminal optimist. So I actually, like, from a very, very deep, deep place, believe that life is perfect and that the universe is giving me exactly what I need for my highest life.
Right.
And I do believe that whatever you focus on grows. So if you focus on gratitude and appreciation and finding the blessing in everything, you're a more positive person and you manifest more positive things. So definitely. But I mean, honestly, the speech impediment was the least of the issues when I was younger. Like I was legally blind by third grade.
Jesus.
Wait.
Legally blind. Now you can see now.
I had LASIK surgery, but I do now. I am blind in my right eye again because of the
full on.
No, well, the middle of the eye.
Yeah,
the middle of the eye. I'm fully blind in. So, like, you know, which whatever, and you know, to
you can drive and all that.
Yep, I can drive. You know, I to do the vision test, I have to like angle my head and do it with my peripheral.
Oh, interesting.
Because I do have peripheral vision, and people are always, you know, oh, does it affect your fighting? No, it doesn't affect my fighting. And if it did, I probably wouldn't talk about the fact that I'm blind in my right eye.
Tommy Iommi of Black Sabbath had three fingers.
You know?
Killed it.
That's the thing. It's like you work with what you got, and nobody's got a full set of everything.
In fact, sometimes that stuff makes you work harder.
I totally think so. I mean, and that's what I was going to say. I was legally blind by third grade. I was a preemie and had very, very, very severe asthma. Growing up, to the point that I had to go down to the nurse's office and get breathing treatments throughout the day. At school, I was told I would never be able to do athletics, and, you know, spend a lot of... Yeah, so, you know, I... And, like I mentioned before, I'm just plain fucking weird, too, you know? Yeah. So, you know, I had the headgear and the breathing machine and the huge bottle cap glasses and dressed very creatively and was a very strange little girl.
No tattoos at the time.
No tattoos at the time.
We discussed your tattoos last. I wouldn't mind if there's another tattoo, we could discuss this particular
show. We can discuss whatever you want. You know me, I'm an open book.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I, the way that I was bullied was that kids would like, you know, kids were just mean and would pick on me, but like there was a brother and sister group that like they thought it was so funny to pretend the guy had a crush on me because I was like the most undesirable and like
in the movies.
Yeah, exactly. And like just really everybody had a real good laugh about it. And then and a couple of times I got beat up after school, like got my, you know, got my face punched and got, you know, attacked on the playground after class. And
I remember a couple girls or one.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I remember all I did was open my hands and stand there and take it. And
open your hands.
Yes, I turned my palms to them and I just stood there and did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And As a
would you like to have a go with one of those girls now?
You know what? No, because not at all. anybody who's that kind of person at that age has their own thing going on that's probably not very good.
And, that's a good point.
You know, I was sort of starting to say, I'm really grateful that I went through that as a child, because one of my earliest memories was, and this is very personal, I don't know why I'm telling you and everybody this, but was looking in the mirror and like pulling my lip down over my gaps, my messed up teeth, and thinking, nobody's ever going to love me. I'm so ugly and so weird. And I really had this belief of that. And so not being a beautiful child caused me to place value in being something other than attractive and being great
Very interesting.
Stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's been what I've always valued, is not being a beautiful girl, but being a capable human being and a powerful human being. And I feel like that's been, I've carried that throughout my entire life in a really strong way. So,
mm-hmm. Okay. Great answer. Yes. What do you feel about feminism? In Seattle, a lot of girl power happening. And do you feel like you're, you know, they're right. All the bands in town that are worth a shit right now are female. It's an interesting time, I think. I see things changing as far as things shifting, power, structure-wise.
Uh-huh.
What do you feel like? Do you feel like you represent women, or you feel like you're just a fighter? I mean, does that factor into it, the fact that you are a female?
You know, that is a very interesting question, because
I think you know what I'm trying to say. I can't exactly.
I do, and I don't exactly know how to answer that. I know, you know, at the gym, my coach Ivan, who's we're very close.
And he's Salivary.
Yes, Ivan Salivary.
Salivary.
He always says at the gym, he says, "You're not a woman, you're a fighter at my gym," and it's true. I approach the sport as a human being trying to be great at something I care about. You know, I don't fight with my vagina, but a lot of people, I haven't yet. It could happen. Tune in November 2nd.
Leg lock.
No.
I don't know.
I enjoy being a woman.
Yeah.
And I recognize that there are different opportunities and obstacles presented to me because I am a female. And
interesting, because you put opportunities in with obstacles.
It's absolutely true.
Right.
You know, I don't feel like it's inequality, you know. I feel like it's just different. You know, we're different as men and women.
Right.
And I think those differences are beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I think some of them are funny and some of them mm-hmm. are, you know, hilarious. And you know, I'm proud when people feel like I am a good representative of women's MMA. And I'm equally proud when people feel that I'm a good representative of MMA. You know, it's kind of all the same to me. But I certainly, you know, I certainly have women that I look up to specifically because they're females and have done so well in the sport. You know,
who would those women be?
Well, one of them is.
So we can get a little pub for these people, because I don't know who they are.
Yeah, well, one of the women that I'm really actually super excited about is Cindy Hales. She is a local. She's a second degree jiu-jitsu black belt under Gracie Baja, and she is absolutely a legend.
Gracie Baja, that has something to do with the Royce Gracie and all those, the Gracie family.
Gracie,
and what's Gracie
schools.
Baja?
It's just it's one of the groups of schools.
In town here?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're all over. I mean, they're very widespread. But she's amazing. I mean, she's been a black belt way before I ever even knew what cage fighting was. And she's fought absolutely unquestionably all the way up to the best woman in the world. She's fought. She was at my pro pro debut. I remember seeing her and being like, oh my God, that's Cindy Hales. She's wow. She's in the gym, and I shook her hand because she's friends with Ivan.
She was in the audience watching?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And I was really pretty excited about it. And then fast forward a few months, I was coming into wrestling practice, and I had a broken nose, so I was kind of taking it a little bit easy, or planning to, and mm-hmm. I walked into the gym, and one of my other training partners, Chaz, ran up to the door, and he's like, come in, you gotta roll, Cindy Hales is here, and blah, blah, blah. Now, she's not that much bigger than me. She's like 135, I think, or so.
Okay.
Maybe 130, I don't really know. She's fought all the way up from 45 down to 15. She's mm-hmm. just a badass. And so I was like, okay, I have to work with her. My nose is broken. This is going to suck, but I have to work with her. And she just fucking manhandled me. I mean, she's just, I mean, it was awesome. It was epic. I mean, I've never
wow.
felt a woman that small that could do the things she could do. And she kept, I mean, she's mean. She's very, very mean. She has like very aggressive, mean jiu-jitsu, which I love. Because that's what I need. I need little person.
Your nose was broken. Was this like tender to the touch?
Oh, it's like facial expressions make me want to cry. Yeah.
Was she hitting you in the nose?
She was cross-facing, squeezing me across the nose. I did about 3 rounds with her.
That would be
and I was
unbearable, I would think.
Yeah, it was. I was about to pass out. And if it hadn't been Cindy Hales, I would have rather fucking ripped my fingernails out with pliers. But, you know, and so finally at the end, I was just like, I'm so sorry. I can't keep going. My nose is broken. Like, but thank you so much for the work. I mean, I was just like happy that wow. I'd gotten that in with her. And she was like, no problem. Like, I didn't know about your nose. Obviously I hadn't wanted to say anything. And she was like, well, I'll come down and work with you again. And, we just really hit it off. And she has yeah. personally trained me for this fight and is cornering me. And so she has been coming down from Gold Bar, which is like over an hour drive out of the city, you know, 3 days a week to personally train me, personally give me a grappling game plan, and has absolutely just made a world of difference in my jiu-jitsu for MMA. She's amazing.
Rock and roll. I think that's a good place. I want to play a couple songs.
Cool. Perfect.
We come back. Oh, Phoenix Jones may or may not come down today. Sorry if anybody was like totally listening for him, but Thea's going to talk about him a little bit, about her adventures with him. I'd like to hear about that. I also want to hear about how you cut weight, how all that stuff cool. works, because it's very interesting.
Cool.
Normal people do not go through that shit.
And thank God for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to play some Iggy Pop, a song called China Girl. And it's very cool. And David Bowie covered it later. But I think David Bowie helped write it, so. All right, folks. Stay tuned in. We're with Thea Wolf and more interesting talk to come. So we're here with Thea, and I think we're going to play a Danzig song later, because one of our mutual friends, or no, sorry, is it Danzig? Yeah. What?
Yes.
Killer Wolf?
Yeah, there is.
It's a good cut?
It is. I'm a big fan of Danzig.
Are you?
I love that guy. He's something special.
What do you like about Danzig?
I like a lot of things about Danzig. I like that he rocks his real face as hard as he can and that he takes himself super seriously.
Wait. He rocks his real face?
Yeah.
Meaning just like...
Danzig has been the same since he was like a young teenager, you know, fronting the Misfits.
Do you mean like he hasn't had plastic surgery?
I mean that he still puts fucking styrofoam gargoyles on stage for an hour before his show. I mean, he's just... His music style has been the same. He is actually a very legit composer. He's written songs for... God, I think like even Roy Orbison, like he's written.
Really?
Yeah, he is.
That's cred.
He is really actually very gifted musically, and he's also very hilarious.
So, you said real face. You don't mean his actual face.
No, I that's an expression I use. Like being yourself, rock your real face. Like
I thought you meant like Michael Douglas having sex in an 80s movie, real face.
Wow, I really like that you went there.
You know, just like ugh.
No, that was sweet.
I thought that's what you meant. But no, you meant just like keeping, like being yourself.
I just mean, yeah, being what you really are and not having any apologies about it. And I like him for that.
Yeah.
I think he's pretty fucking funny to me.
Did you see the picture of him carrying cat litter out of like the Walmart?
No, I didn't.
It's funny. It's just Danzig carrying some cat litter and
there's
people are talking shit about
YouTube it. YouTube video called Danzig Shopping List, where he sings like all his groceries. Somebody's made it, like put it together and like imitated Danzig singing, but it's very funny. It's a, like stupid Photoshop montage. And there's also my favorite Danzig bastardization online is a mix of Danzig and Shakira from the Hips Don't Lie song, and it's phenomenal. It will change your life. I highly suggest you watch it.
It's a mashup of those two songs.
It's a mashup of Shakira and Danzig. Like it's like every romance novel had a baby and poured the baby into the video. It's pretty special.
Yeah, we might get to that.
I highly recommend it.
Anyway, so you love Danzig. Did you like his previous band? What was it? The
Misfits.
Yeah.
I mean, Danzig is a pioneer. He changed music. Like Danzig is definitely a figurehead that, you know, I think deserves to be. I mean, he's the evil Elvis. He's something special.
He does sing a little bit like Elvis.
He does. It's why they call him evil Elvis. I mean, if we're going to play a song of Danzig's, I would definitely recommend either Killer Wolf or I get really sappy because Danzig is kind of a crooner, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
My good friend, Jeff Sparks, and I have been known to buy a case of beer and play the song Going Down to Die on repeat, you know, approximately 70 to 250 times.
I've done that with songs.
Yeah, we do that and sing it and we act it out and there are ice skater lifts and a lot of like near falls to our death off the roof.
What's it called? Going Down to Die?
Going Down to Die. Yeah, it's a good Danzig video.
Wow. I've got the Shakira Danzig thing queued
up. I don't think it'll translate on the radio that well. But
yeah, fuck it. You're here till noon, right? We got a little time to talk.
I certainly am.
We got into Danzig, and let's play this and maybe one of the other songs.
Okay, but this isn't, just so you know, this isn't really Danzig.
Is it funny? Is it worth playing?
It's very funny, but it's funnier when you can watch the video.
Oh, really?
I would suggest people look this up on their own because the video is a huge part of this.
Okay.
And look up, I mean, I'm partial to... Obviously, Killer Wolf and Going Down to Die.
Which one? Which one you want the people to hear that, you know, most represents you, Thea?
Well, I would say I would say Killer Wolf most represents me, but the Going Down to Die has a guitar solo that just serious sploosh. So
you figure that one?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that one. I represent myself. Screw the other Killer Wolves.
Going Down to Die. I've never heard this song. I'm stoked.
I like it.
Okay, so guys, this is Radio by the Seat of Your Pants. we went to Danzig. We're going to play the song "Going Down to Die." Evidently, Thea Wolf listens to this.
I do. With Jeff.
She has listened. With who?
With Jeff. Jeff Sparks, this is for you, baby.
From 70 to 150 times in a row. Yes. Acted out?
Oh, yes. Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah.
Virgin Sacrifices, the works. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Sounds great. All right, guys. We'll be back in a few. That was a good song.
It's a great song.
I think I'm actually maybe a Danzig fan now, yeah. A little more. I mean, I liked Mother growing up, right? Great song. And obviously, everybody loves that song.
It got so overplayed that people have this association with, that is the Danzig song.
But there's other songs.
Definitely, by far, not the best Danzig song.
He's a good singer.
He is, actually.
It's unadorned.
He's a really good composer.
To be able to sing like that with such... It's clear it's kind of minimal production. There's kind of a guitar track, bass, and it still comes across very well. Yeah. Like, you could sit there and you could fuck with it and do some backup harmonies and mix, you know, double your vocal, whatever it is. But it seems like it's really raw production, but it still sounds really nice.
Yeah, and the thing that's cool about Danzig is he does everything himself. He's, really a true artist. He's a very... does things Danzig's way, which is something I really like and admire in any artist, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So.
I was talking about that kind of thing with somebody last night, you know. I introduced them to a band called Dead Moon, and I just told you about it. Definitely check them out.
Okay.
Really cool. You'll love them. He was like, I don't like the voice, you know, and you can't hear the fucking, the bass drum on the fucking thing. And I'm like, well, dude. You used to listen to Top 40 shit. Like, these are real artists, portraying their own voice and making it themselves. Like, they could have spent $1 million on a record for something you might like.
Right.
But they can do 100 records with that budget, but they'll do it their own way, in a little lo-fi, and your ears have to adjust, but it's fucking awesome. Yeah,
totally.
Because it's their own voice. Do you know what I mean, Thea?
I do. I like the real deal stuff. You know, I don't like the sound of production.
Right.
You know, I like the sound of creation and
production really ties something to an era.
It absolutely, for better, for worse. That's, you know, so true.
If you listen to every fucking show, I got to bring up Nirvana, right? Sorry, but you listen to Nevermind, and it sounds like the early '90s.
Yeah,
super produced. You listen to In Utero, it's kind of timeless sounding because it sounds exactly like they did live. Mm-hmm. Because Steve Albini just kind of set up mics and captured them as a band, as opposed to making it into something super radio.
That is very, very interesting and very true.
Aside from Heart-Shaped Box and All Apologies, which were reproduced by Scott Litt, but still. That's a different story. We don't go into that now. We went into that in the past, and we probably will in the future. But... all right, Thea. So I'm very interested in the mechanics of fighting. You're fighting this Saturday, for those of you who just tuned in. You're fighting this Saturday a woman, Tiny. She had Tiny in her name. No, what was her name?
No, Amy Little Dynamite Davis.
Little Dynamite.
All of us little Adam Waits have some fucking nickname that...
Do you have a... You don't have a...
I do.
What's your...
My manager, who is... my favorite human just about on the planet, Johnny Flavin, he gave me my nickname, which is La Lobita, which means
Little Wolf.
Yeah. Very, nice. Very creative, right? Nice. But it just kind of stuck. So, yeah. And, you know, the little girls, a lot of them have nicknames that... are like, oh, we're small, ha ha. Yeah. It's just what we get coined with. You know, we don't choose our own fight names. I mean, I don't know anybody who's...
And you get a bunch of big dudes around, they're going to say something like
exactly,
that.
Exactly.
Lobita's nice.
It is. I like it. It's very cute and very affectionate. And, you know, everyone at the gym calls me Little Wolf or you know, whatever. Everybody everywhere, actually. So I've just...
Oh, really?
...embraced it. I get Little Wolf a lot, yeah.
Okay.
So...
Huh, yeah. So you spent 5 hours a day training. Now, you said this is your rest period.
Yeah.
Are you training now?
Or
no?
Not really. I mean, I did an hour of cardio yesterday.
Doing cardio.
And, you know, just to do it. Right now, I'm just, relaxing. Tonight, I'm going to drill with Cindy because she's coming in, and we're just going to run over a few things. But Wednesday, I will train. Wednesday I'm going to do a good hard pad workout.
For how many hours?
Not long, probably hour and a half, very light. And then Thursday and Friday I'm off. I mean, I'm done working now. I'm done working for this fight. I'm done learning. I'm done training. Just
you got to keep that focus, or are you not trying to focus on it this week and just saving?
I'm very focused. There is nothing that can take my focus off.
Let me rephrase that. If you're playing a rock show and you're hanging around a bar for 8 hours, you want to be focused on what you're doing. But if you think about it the whole time, you might think yourself like, you might exhaust yourself thinking about it.
Right.
And by the time the show comes around, is it something you kind of want to distance yourself from? And then like the day of the fight or the day before the fight, start really thinking about it? Or how do you mean? How do
you do it? Yeah, I mean, you know, I just kind of let my mind go soft. And if my thoughts go to my fight, then they do. And if they don't, that's fine with me too. I mean, right now it's just like, you know, relaxation time. It's a time to get my sympathetic nervous system back on point. Because I've just been in, you know, fight or flight mode for a while.
During all the training.
Yeah. So I'm like just sort of relaxing now, taking advantage of, you know, not having to train every day. So like I said earlier, I'm getting a massage today. I'm super stoked on that. I'm going to be getting some floats in with my sponsor, Float Seattle, which is really an amazing way to recover. Isolation tanks.
Oh, yeah. That's in Fremont.
The one that I go to is the Green Lake location. It's called Float Seattle.
Okay.
And the owner, Sean, has sponsored me since my pro debut. And it is just the most amazing thing. It's amazing.
Real quickly, run that through that. What does it mean to float?
So the isolation tanks are there. I think they have four now at Float Seattle. And it's like a really high concentration of Epsom salts and like good healing salts. And the water temperature is exactly body temperature. So when you go in there, you're basically evenly suspended. You're evenly above and below water, but you can't really tell what's above and below because the temperature inside the tank is controlled. And you have earplugs in and it's dark and you're in this enclosed little space and just floating. So
your head's above water?
You float on your back. So you're face up and just suspended, and it gives you this really amazing sensation of total weightlessness because you're not using any of your muscles to hold your body up like you would when you were seated.
Anytime.
Yeah. And after about 20 minutes in the tank, your stress hormone production is shut off and your dopamine production goes into overdrive.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah, it's pretty fucking amazing, actually. Like, I've had some, you know, powerful hallucinogenic experiences, and I say this as somebody who, back in my art,
who has had some powerful
hallucinogens. Yes, so it's. I mean, I've gone pretty far out in these tanks. It's been
once again. If you guys want to get into that with the go back to the other podcast, talk about it.
It's
go to podomatic.com. Shit show, Jaybo. Go on.
Indeed, we had a good first talk.
Yeah,
too.
It was great. Yeah.
But yeah, it's also
like, they re-air that thing at night, like occasionally. Oh. They'll re-air my interviews, and yours was the one that stuck out as the first one to re-air.
Oh, really? That's funny. Awesome.
We talked about your cockstriches.
Yes,
on
indeed.
Your flanks.
We did
running wild on your flanks.
We
or something.
We talked about all kinds of things.
I mean, that was in the pool quote. Like,
yeah,
people were loving.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yeah, and also because you're not using your body for a little period of time, somebody like me who's an athlete that is, you know, overtraining, it's like getting a deep tissue massage but without the invasive, you know, deep tissue massage.
Yeah.
It's like,
oh really?
Yeah, the first time I walked out of there, it felt like my body had just been aligned.
And how much is that to do?
You know what?
You get it for free.
Yeah, they sponsor me, so I am, you know.
I'm just curious, I'd like to try it. Maybe other people would. Is it $30, $50,
$100? I think the first float, I really could be misquoting. Look up Float Seattle online, but the I think it's somewhere around there. They have a first price rate, which is lower, mm-hmm. and then different package deals. It's somewhere around 40 something bucks, I think, for the first one.
Okay.
But honestly, so worth it. It's such an incredible experience. Everybody who I've brought in to do it has been amazed. You know, it's about what you would pay for a massage, little less than you'd pay for a massage, and just hits you on every level. You know, the salt draws impurities out of you.
Oh, I'm sorry, it was salt water.
Yeah.
That's what allows you to float.
Right. It's a whole bunch of Epsom salt. So it's just this super cleansing, healing experience.
When you get out, does your skin feel a little slimy?
Feels awesome. But there's the shower in there that you rinse off with before and after you go into the tank and everything. But yeah, you feel, I mean, it's just a completely wonderful experience. I'm so grateful these guys sponsor me.
That's awesome. Now, you've been training like we talked about, and now I see you have this gallon jug of water with you. You were sipping on earlier and talking about, I forget what you called it, but
water loading.
What's that up? What's up with that? What do you mean?
So, as you may or may not know, I don't know. Well, obviously there are different weight classes for fighters. And I fight at atom weight, which is the smallest weight, atom, A-T-O-M weight. So that's 105. I walk around closer to, depending on, you know, what time of year it is, whether or not I've been injured, between like 116 and like the low 120s.
Okay.
So so the last bit of weight is dehydration that we cut off. I'll usually diet down to... you know, like I said earlier, off the air, I'm weighing, I think, 113 right now.
Yeah.
And the rest of it, I'm going to take off in water. And we do that by sweating. So this week, I start something called water loading. And that means starting on Sunday, I'm drinking about 2 gallons of water a day to trick my system into producing a hormone that triggers excretion of water. So it's basically like my body thinks, oh, I'm getting so much water, I need to get rid of a bunch of water. So your body gets into the habit of pushing water through at a quicker pace. And I will do that all the way till Thursday. I'll cut down to 1 gallon on Thursday. And then after I teach my evening kids class, which ends at 5, I will completely stop eating and drinking until weigh-ins on Friday. And
so you're adding all this water, but you're also sweating. So you're sweating more than the water you're adding?
Well, what I was going to say is that after I stop drinking, I start sweating. You don't start trying to remove the body or the water from the body until about, 24 hours before weigh-ins.
Okay.
Because it's just not, this is not good for you. It's not good
saunas?
For your kidneys. I've done it. A lot of people do it in a lot of really painful and brutal ways, including like, I mean, I've seen guys like in plastic suits locked in a sauna on an exercise bike. That's not the way I like to do it. And fortunately, like my diet's very clean and I cut down to where I don't have a big weight cut.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that's very healthy or, you know, anything I really want to do. But I just Thursday night will sit in the hot tub. Sit in a hot tub up to my neck for 2, maybe 3 hours.
Because you are sweating.
Right. And I'll lose probably 5 pounds.
The hot tub like that.
Yeah, that way. And then maybe drink a little bit back just to keep my body functioning okay. Go to sleep, wake up, and sweat off the rest. Between hot tub.
Day of weigh-ins. That's Friday morning.
Friday morning, right. Okay. And so I will show up to weigh-ins at much more sucked out looking than I am right now. I'll look noticeably different because all the water will be out of my body. Wow. And then, it's so funny because like people post the weigh-in pictures. That's like a big thing where like, you know, there's, you know, press and stuff. And I get messages on Facebook from girls that are like, how do you get your body to look like that? I've been trying. It's like, you don't. This isn't my body. This is my body with no fluid in it. And I am currently sexually attracted to coconut water. So, like, don't think this is my body.
Meaning you're very, very thirsty?
You don't feel good when you're dehydrated. It's very bad. There have been MMA fighters who've died doing this very recently. Right. Within the last month, there was a fighter who died
doing it. It's crazy to put your body through that amount of what I would view as trauma, and then going in and trying to do something superhuman the next day.
Well, that's why you have to be really smart about it. And, like, you know, we MMA fighters aren't always the brightest bulbs on the Christmas tree. and not everybody does it very intelligently.
Right.
And, you know, cut. There's a certain amount of weight that you can cut and get away with. And it can be advantageous.
Some people go too far.
Many people go too far, and many people do it very stupidly. You know, a lot of fighters, and this sounds very weird to say, but I've seen over and over that there are fighters that confuse dieting and cutting weight, or don't understand how to, you know, nuance the differences. For example, yeah. I have seen fighters in plastic suits a week out from their fight. There is no fucking point to dehydrating at that point. In fact, it's counterproductive.
Yeah.
You know, you diet, you know, I eat a very clean way and I adjust my food this week. You know, carbohydrates retain more water. So this final week, I'm eating a lot less carbohydrates. I'm eating a lot of fat and a lot of protein because the water will
bacon?
Go through me. I would like to eat some bacon. Do you have some?
No, but I can hook that up.
Wow. That would be a real treat.
Not the 5 point.
My God. Well, if I come down to the 5 point after my win, I'm going to expect a really spectacular bacon.
Oh, I'll treat. Let him know.
Okay. I'd like that.
I'll let him know.
I'm also a big fan of the sausage you guys have.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I you know what? Even
The
beginning of my diet, I will go in and I'll get the sausage and 2 poached eggs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a great meal.
Yeah, it is. It's a very satisfying meal. Mm-hmm. That's a meal that I like to eat when I'm locked out of my house because I lose my keys gallivanting around the streets.
Have you done that?
True story.
When?
actually, it was out after I was out with Phoenix one night. And
at the 5 point, though? Or somewhere else?
Well, actually, you know what? I went to Lost Lake, the sister.
Yeah, Lost Lake. Sure.
Sister. I deeply, deeply prefer the 5 point. However, I was walking at this time and I was on Capitol Hill. But yes, that's that poached eggs and sausage combo. You know me. I love that jukebox at the 5 point. I love the 5 point. That's
your joint.
That's my
I've
joint.
I've seen in there many times.
Exactly.
At the same booth almost every
time. And with Jeff, who is my partner in crime, who we just
I know
that
who
song
you're
dedicated
about,
to. Yes. That's
he's a funny guy. You guys were talking about taping your wrist together with a bottle of whiskey or something at a fucking Cannibal Corpse show or
something?
Right,
exactly. Yeah, Jeff and I are very, very special together. he is...
At the Highline?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. That was at El Corazon, actually. And really, when we found out that Cannibal Corpse tickets were $30, we agreed that it would be smarter for us to get some duct tape, a bottle of shitty whiskey, and duct tape our hands to it and refused to let go until it was gone. So we have a lot of really great ideas, Jeff and I together. He and I can make a trip to Value Village, last 3 hours, and be dangerous and hilarious.
So. Sober?
Yes, ironically, mm-hmm. amazingly.
Yeah.
We're just a magical duo. He's maybe my spirit animal. I'm not really sure.
He is your spirit.
He's very special.
Yeah. Okay. You got any new tattoo work?
I don't. I haven't gotten tattooed in a while. You know, it's something where I'd need to take some time off training for healing.
I'd like to bring up at least a little tattoo. Like, you got some great tattoos. And
thanks.
We talked about your cock stretches on your legs. We talked about the fate fucking
the lion.
Earth. Lion.
Anally banging the bull on a rainbow on my back. Yeah.
Yeah. Any others that stick out like in your mind right now? We could maybe talk about just
you
for
know,
a second.
Those are the ones that are probably the most hilarious to everybody.
Those two.
The rest of I have some funny tattoos on my torso. Those are the funny ones on my torso. And then the rest of my tattoos are a lot of them are tarot cards and more spiritual,
deeper personal meanings.
They all have their own deep personal resonance with me,
okay, cool. What was I gonna say? Okay, so after weigh-in,
mm-hmm.
do you gorge yourself?
No, but it's very hard not to gorge after you win a fight.
After the fight, you
right? So after weigh-ins, it's time to eat, and I'm very hungry. And very excited. See, weigh-ins are like, it's a huge thing. It's a huge event because once the fighter has made weight, it's all fun from there. It's like all the hard work is done. The final bit is stepping on that scale, making weight, and being like, all right, now all I have to do is eat and sleep and beat some ass.
That's, and you enjoy it.
It's exactly. It's all fun from there. So
that's great.
After weigh-ins, I have a bunch of people that will be in town. So I'm probably going to go eat some good Thai food and enjoy my friends and then go home and sleep and wake up and eat some more and kick some ass.
That's awesome. I wish you the best of luck on that fight, and I can't be there because I have a show happening at
the Highline. Yeah, I'm pretty heartbroken about that.
But I'm going to come to your weigh-in.
Good. I'm glad you're going to come.
That sounds great.
That's going to be great to have you there.
And I'm going to bring some people because we want you to have a posse, a bigger posse than I'm sure you already have. tell me about Phoenix Jones. You both knew about each other, but I sent one fateful Facebook message to both of you, and it kind of, you guys became friends a little bit.
Yeah.
Yes, at that point?
Yeah, we did. I mean.
And you're pretty tight.
What, yeah, definitely. Like,
Gallivant?
Yes. You know, what basically happened was, a while ago, one of my friends who I was hanging out with, I was showing that one of the videos of him, you know, kicking the shit out of some dude online. Our mutual combat law out here is awesome. Yes.
Great
but
video.
It's really funny and really fun. So I showed the video to my friend and she said something really funny, just kind of a joke. She said, oh my God, he looks like a big sexy bumblebee. Can we call him up and tell him there's a crime in my vagina? And I tweeted this quote thinking it was really funny.
That's funny.
And he saw it and followed me on Twitter and, you know, hit me up and really liked it. And then when you invited us to...
Oh, so this had all happened before.
This had happened before. I didn't know him, you know. Okay. But then you hit us both up in the same feed on Facebook or the same whatever message.
Yeah.
And he said, so you should come out with us sometime. And I said, yeah, probably. And he said, what are you doing tonight at midnight? And I said... no plans. And he said, I'll pick you up. And he did. And we went out and I, it was
crime fighting.
Yeah. It was up to a very exciting start. The team said that, you know, I got in there at a very exciting time. Like the first, we definitely like saved a guy's life that first night, who was OD'd seriously badly and was in really bad shape.
What was he doing?
We found him in an alley, and it was so sad, man. 21st birthday kid with two friends in an alley, and they could barely hold him up. And he wasn't a big guy. He was just dead weight. And we walked up and said, you guys okay? You need some help? And they were like, oh, yeah, can you please help us get him to our car? And the kid was absolutely covered in puke and foaming at the mouth. And everyone was like...
Jesus.
Yeah, it was not good. And... we sort of walked to the edge of the alley, and I looked at him, and I said to Phoenix, I was like, we can't help this guy to his car. He's OD'd. Like, we need to get him medical intervention. And so Phoenix was like, all right, let's sit down and make a plan. And we sat him down, and they called for medical. And while that happened, this guy sort of started convulsing and then collapsed. And Phoenix put his hand on his neck and said his heart, like, stopped. And then... I guess like an adrenaline surge sort of must have restarted it because then it started pounding really hard. But we got AMR out there and got him taken away. He was in very bad shape when they showed up. So it was pretty intense. And then we managed to apprehend two guys who had assaulted another guy that had gotten away. Like Phoenix has a very impressive team.
Yeah. Racism.
Racism?
No, it's... Rain City Superheroes.
Oh.
It's spelled RCSM.
Yeah, that's so funny.
And it's great because you see like racism on the streets of Seattle. Like, it's sweet, you know. It's catchy.
Yeah, that is funny. I didn't think about that. So, yeah, we had fun. And they were all really happy to have, you know, these guys are like, he's got like, you know, different military people who have really spectacular nose for crime. All kinds of really amazing people on the team, but he doesn't have another athlete that can run with him until I joined up with him. So he was very happy to have somebody that
not literally run, but maybe
we sprinted to chase people. Run. We sprinted across Capitol Hill.
Are you
Hill
a fast person?
Am I a fast person?
I mean,
person?
You run, like, nice, hard?
Yeah. I'm a professional athlete, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, I mean...
All right.
Yeah, I mean, Phoenix and I could get to the scene of whatever crime, like, Lickety 2 minutes before everybody else got there.
They come up totally winded.
yeah, yeah. I mean, and Phoenix is a super athlete. He's really...
amazing guy.
Yeah. He's a specimen, for sure. And
he... The jury's still out. He may be fighting on November 2nd.
As far as I know, he is now. Yeah, as far as I know, he's fighting. So that'll be really fun.
Well, one last thing I thought interesting. You said you guys went to a porn house.
Oh, well, it was no longer a porn house. It was a house that had been foreclosed that apparently had been a porn mansion. But yeah, it was.
What, were they made a bunch of porn?
I guess. I mean, I don't know. This is just what I was told.
Oh, okay,
I mean, it was just a really nice house that some of his friends had gotten on foreclosure with, like, a pool with a water slide, and like it was really fun. you know, we had some really great adventures. I haven't been running around with him since I've been in fight camp because my fight camp has been consuming me. But
understood.
But it's been really fun. You know, we got involved in a. This is a funny thing that we did together. There was a like kind of quiet night. We were all out. Then we wound up in the middle of like, I'm not even exaggerating, like a 20-man gang fight. And Phoenix actually pepper sprayed me with military grade pepper spray. And
par for the course.
Right in my fucking eyeballs. And it was pretty intense. Like I had sort of circled
was
around.
Was this to kind of toughen you up?
No, he was just.
Or was it by accident?
It was just a huge brawl with a lot of people happening, and you sort of friendly fire. It happened. I, you know, was dealing with people on the one side of the brawl. He was dealing with people on the other side of the brawl, and I just remember kind of turning my head, and I just see it was like a slow motion moment. His can come up in this stream, and I felt the liquid just go right in my eyes.
Jesus Christ!
And I just thought. Oh shit.
You had a second before it started burning.
Yeah, but I knew like it was not probably going to be very good. And so like, you know, and then he sprinted off across the street. There was like some other fight.
I got tear gassed once.
It was yeah, this was like
it was bad.
Yeah, this was this apparently like stronger than shit that civilians can buy. It's like really really strong.
Oh yeah.
And I just remember being like, "Fuck." Like I was like, Phoenix, you sprayed me, like, and he didn't hear me. And so one of the other members of our team, Usid, grabbed me by the hand and kind of put me down between two cars. And he had these wipes that have a sort of a neutralizer on them. But the particular pepper spray that I got sprayed with has like an accelerant with it, and it has activators to open your pores so it goes deeper in.
Oh,
and Usid was describing to me the molecule is actually shaved down to be like a goat head, so it has burrs. So if you touch it, it cuts you, and like the molecules actually like make micro cuts on you, like agitates
this
you further.
Fucking brutal.
So it was pretty like it pretty intense. Pepper spray job. And I just remember sitting there with Usid took such good care of me. He was like, damn, you're handling yourself like a boss, like this is great. And I was like, no, I'm fine, but like I'm scared a little bit because I can't see, and there is a gang fight going on, and like apparently Phoenix had just like knocked somebody out with his can who had pulled a gun. It was like it was a pretty chaotic scene. And and Phoenix ended up coming back and going, who pepper sprayed you? And I said, you did, dude. And he was like, no way. But he ended up piggybacking me out of there. Like,
you jumped on his back?
He yeah, we had to split pretty fast.
Yeah.
Jumped on his back. And then we all went out and drank peanut butter milkshakes. And
now you have blue hair now. Wonderful blue hair.
I have something. I have fucking...
That's kind of... You said you don't have bangs, but it's been ripped out halfway
my
down
Cindy
the shaft.
My Cindy Hales mullet, yeah.
Because of the woman you've been training
yeah.
with, right?
My hair... I mean, you know, I have cave woman. I have, like, a troll under the bridge hair. And that's just... That's who I... You know, like I said, rock your real face. I look like what I am. It's okay.
It doesn't look bad, though.
It looks pretty bad,
not to me. I don't know what you're used to.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very nice of you.
It's fine. Looks just fine. And if you look at the picture that we were talking about on my Facebook page or on the Hollow Earth Facebook page, it looks like beautiful blonde hair.
My God, thank you so much.
It was black and white. So.
I take that as a compliment from a man who dates a woman with like the most gorgeous hair I've ever seen in my life. So thank you.
Yes, she does.
She
Brianna definitely does. Hey, sweetie. We're going to go to that weigh-in. So, you know, it's funny. We're like at 11:56, and where did the time go?
My God, we just have so much fun together.
Really quick, yeah.
Imagine if there was whiskey and bacon.
Oh, man. I would be down with the bacon and a little bit of whiskey. I'm such a lightweight, though. I might be totally useless, so you could do
that's
that.
That's okay. I'll take over the mic. I'll ask you questions.
That's good. That'd be about right.
I'll play you songs. No, I'm serious.
Like, it just, we started at 10, just after 10.
I know.
I don't even remember where the last 2 hours went, but
I felt this way last time.
I know. Same deal.
Yeah.
I think you're such an artist, Thea, that you just have a thirst for expressing yourself. And this is yet another medium. And it just, I think it comes so natural. I love the performance aspect of it. I do the same thing, and it's cool.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're probably like this all the time. But.
I'm glad that you you invited me back. I always have fun here.
Well, next time you got something going on, we'll invite you back a third time, no problem.
Yeah, or sometime when I can just eat a huge pile of bacon with you.
Yes.
You know, one time I had a meat sausage sundae eating contest, and I killed it. So
what a meat sausage sundae? Was that with ice cream?
It was ice cream, maple syrup, sausage, and bacon.
Wow.
And yeah. Spoken like a true pro athlete.
How long ago was that?
It was right out of Cornish, right out of art school. And I just had like 3 cases of Bud Light left. Mm-hmm. And I invited my friend Jake over and suggested that we have a meat sausage sundae eating contest and a Bud Light drinking contest. And I murdered him.
Drank, straight up?
Yeah. No, I mean, no, proverbially.
You have a hunger.
I have a hunger.
You're hungry.
And you know what? At the end of the day, I never really see myself this way, but I really guess at my very core, I am competitive.
I would say so.
Yeah, so everybody else does. I don't really feel that way. But
like to me.
When push comes to shove, I guess I am.
And you're hungry, I don't mean like that's in every sense.
No, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, thirsty too.
Yeah, I don't really think of myself as competitive, but I have to beat everyone.
Yeah, no, I feel you. Well, thank you, Thea.
Thank
I'm going to play one more song here. Everybody, oh, real quick, Thea, where can people know all about you?
You can find me on, well, if you want to look at my art, TheaWolf.com, www.TheaWolf.com. You can also find me on Facebook under Thea Wolf for my personal page or Thea Wolf MMA for my fight page. And if you want to come to my fight on Saturday, you can get tickets at the Cage Warrior Combat site. It's at the Showwear Center in Kent, November 2nd. It's going to be a great card. So come out and support local MMA.
Hell yeah.